Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to From the Touchline for 90 Minutes. I'm Tom Stauber. I'm here with Aaron Heinzen, and we're ready to go with a great show today, Heinzen. We're all set. We've got Sam Lady calling in here at 10:15 to talk about Liverpool's late collapse against Crystal Palace earlier this week. He's going to talk about the rest of the Premier League as well. And then at 11 a.m., we've got Seattle Sounders TV personality and Seattle University head men's soccer coach Pete Fewing. He's going to call in, talk about all things Seattle Sounders and the MLS. And until then, Aaron, our listeners are stuck listening to us. And it's just gonna have to be that way for a few minutes here.
We apologize. We apologize for the moment. But we've got some exciting things today, John. What more can we ask for? We got the end of the Premier League with all the drama we've had this past week. Unbelievable. We've got the end of, we got La Liga's heating up, coming down. PSG finally solidifying. We got lots to talk about. We got lots of coaching changes. We got World Cup starting up, which we should pick up more on in the next couple weeks. We've got Champions League drama. We got all kinds of things. World of soccer has never been more exciting, I think, in my opinion.
Well, I don't think I'm in question of how much we have to talk to. It's just the fact that you and I are talking about it, I think, is what people might be upset about. But we're going to do our best and see what happens.
Absolutely.
So, you're listening to Todd Stauber, Aaron Heinzen. You're on From the Touchline for 90 Minutes. You can get us at Blog Talk Radio as well as backsportspage.com. Listeners, you can call and talk with us live at 760-283-0846, and we're gonna get going here. We're gonna talk. We're bringing Sam Liddy on here at 10:15. Former co-host here at, from Touchline for 90 Minutes, Liddy, now of the Seattle Reign in the National Women's Soccer League. He's gonna call in and talk about Liverpool and why him? Because he's a Liverpool fan, and we just want to hear the distress in his voice. Let's talk about this collapse, Aaron, and let's talk about Liverpool fighting for their first Premier League title in years, up 3-0 late in the 79th minute, and it's just a collapse that it was worse. I think this collapse was worse than the collapse that you saw Steven Gerrard have in the Chelsea game when he collapsed and Chelsea scored their first goal.
Agreed, John. I think, people are going to be talking about this for decades, whenever if Liverpool ever do get another title and the chances and the possibilities. One thing I thought that was interesting was back in 1989 under Dalgleish when Liverpool were playing Crystal Palace, everybody remembers the 9-0 victory that they had. And the fans during the game were chanting attack, attack, attack. And whether it was the Liverpool players just drunk on offense and the possibilities of getting back into the race or who knows, but it was just the most stunning return you could possibly see. 11 minutes to go, up 3-0. Everybody would have put their chips on Liverpool finishing the game. And even when it went 3-1, they still kept going. And then it went 3-2, and they still kept going. And that was just the amazing part about it.
Well, Liverpool's end, as the game, as we got deeper into time in the game, I expected the defending to get better.
Yes.
And somehow the defending got worse and worse and worse. And even here you are in the 82nd minute, they're kicking off. You're thinking there's 8 minutes plus injury time to go. They're going to just tuck in. They're going to just sit on this and make sure they get this result. And they didn't. They were wide open. The final goal, the gap between Glenn Johnson and the center back was so big. Glenn Johnson didn't tuck in, ball off the chest, he's in. It was just unbelievable. I couldn't believe the defending, and the look on Brendan Rodgers' face was, priceless for me because I'm a Manchester United fan, but just absolute just disbelief. And you can see it on the face of Luis Suarez, him crying after the game, but, maybe Suarez should have gotten back a little bit and defended instead of crying, but it's just unbelievable to me, and with City taking their points, it's just set up now. Could be a good final weekend, but this collapse is just something that, for Liverpool, they talked about all year. This is their year. They didn't have to play in the Champions League. They didn't have to play in the Europa League, and they bottled it. There's no other way to say it. They bottled it.
Yeah, now Steven Gerrard's been on the other side of a situation like this before. If you remember the Champions League final against AC Milan, and they were down 3-0 at halftime. And then that unbelievable comeback to force the shootout to win the Champions League, which was, again, the same situation. You just watched a team be completely outplayed by Milan absolutely, Milan were phenomenal. And in the second half, you know, Liverpool, I remember, nicked a header goal. Things just started to work out for them. They clicked, and they got back in the game, and there was nothing Milan could do about it. And that's one of the most exciting things about soccer is these things just happen. And as much as we can sit here and talk about it, as much as the coaches are going to talk about it, it's just the momentum swung the other way. Crystal Palace had nothing to play for. Tony Pulis just said, go on. Dwight Gayle subbing on, gets two goals. I mean, they didn't really – Yannick Bolasie is a fast, fast player and just blows by Glenn Johnson to get that goal. I mean, you think, like you said, Todd, why didn't he just touch it? Why didn't he just play it safe instead of going forward? And once you concede a goal, you got to say, okay, we're not going to get the 9-0 annihilation. We're not going to catch City on goals. We're just going to have to hope that Villa or West Ham do their job. But, I mean, it's one of those things in soccer. You're just like, how is this happening? And it happens.
Well, yeah, it is a cruel game, and somehow it keeps us all...
Exactly why. I mean, even at the top levels. Like, you think about this. You know, we coach youth soccer. You see it in youth soccer, and you're like, oh, yeah, well, our kids are inexperienced or blah, blah, blah. No, I mean, those are top players right there. And they just conceded three goals in 11 minutes. It's just unheard of.
Well, it is. And you know, if you look at Liverpool here, you know, over the last, I would say, month or so, I mean, things look good for them. 3-0 win at Manchester United, 6-3 win in Cardiff City, 2-1 over Sunderland, 4-0 over Tottenham. But then, you know, the results started to get a little tighter as we hit April. 2-1 over West Ham, 3-2 over City,
right.
3-2 over Norwich, and then we hit the Chelsea game. And, you know, with City right there on them, right there, and, you know, in a matter of a week, they went from dreaming of a title to you know, just in absolute agony. And now, you know, there still is a chance. Because let's be honest, you know, Newcastle at home should be a result that I would assume they're going to get in their last game at Anfield this year. And, you know, West Ham isn't an easy team for a Man City, a team that likes to play, isn't an easy team to play against. Because, one, Sam Allardyce's head is in the way, and you can't see anything because of the size of it on the pitch. So your vision is already obstructed just coming into the game. But... the way that they play, which, by the way, is absolutely disgusting, they're just going to smash the ball up to Andy Carroll, have him knock the ball down off of his greasy ponytail, and see what happens. And it really is an easy team to play. And, you know, you can see by the results, you know, West Ham's results, they're in every game. They make it hard to play against them. They're going to be very, very direct. And, you know, not an easy game for Man City to win, but Man City knows all about winning this title on the last day of the season as they did 2 years ago, and it should be, you know, should be a good day. But I wouldn't say this collapse against Crystal Palace has definitely cost them the title, because there is another day to play, and as we found out, anything can happen.
Anything can happen. Yeah, City virtually have been handed the trophy, but like you said, there are all kinds of possibilities, and West Ham, our team, with still some respect to show, and, you know, they don't really have that much to play for, but the City could become complacent, and next thing you know, West Ham have got a goal and up by two. You just never know what's going to happen, so Pellegrini's got to keep his guys focused and try and finish this out here, and obviously if I was a betting man, I would bet that they would, but West Ham United, you know, that's not a team you can just overlook, and no one really is, but it'll be interesting to see. Another thing I actually wanted to just talk about, even though it's total speculation, but with the way Luis Suarez has been playing, winning all the Player of the Year awards, do you think this is last year? I mean, if they lose Suarez, you got to think, and going into the Champions League next year, was this their only year in the next few years to win the title?
No, I don't think they're going to lose Suarez.
You don't think so?
At this point, no, because I think, for him, the chance to play in the Champions League with Liverpool is the reason he went there. That was the reason he was saying he would potentially leave last year. I agree with him. He is a player that should be playing Champions League football.
For sure.
He now is going to be doing that. That's
right.
Why he went to Liverpool. It didn't happen in his first year, but I believe he's going to stay there. I mean, things seem to have calmed down a little bit, but aside from his tantrum in the middle of the field there at Selhurst Park this week on Monday. Things seem to settle down with him a little bit. He seems to be enjoying his time at Liverpool. I mean, you know, everybody, every player that plays at Liverpool, you know, will come out and say it's a great place to play. You know, every player that's been there is, you're very endeared by the fans. I think he's enjoying it now. And obviously he's having a lot of success. And in Brendan Rodgers' scheme, he's the main guy in terms of the attack. And I think that he's pretty – Steven Gerrard seemed to be good. And, you know, so I don't see him leaving. But it will be interesting to see Liverpool back in the Champions League next year with that team and see how they can do. And who knows? I mean, after this weekend, I mean, we could have – Liverpool could have the title in their hands and be going to the Champions League. We'll just have to wait and see what happens. I did just get a text from former co-host Sam Lady, and he is not coming on the air today.
He's not making it.
No, his training session for the Seattle Reign was pushed up 10 a.m., and he won't be joining us. We won't get to hear his distress, but we do have Keith Ewing coming on. We do have Keith Ewing coming on at 11. I did just get a text from him. He's looking forward to it, so we're really looking forward to talking to Pete. Pete Ewing, you're listening to Todd Sovereign, Aaron Hines in here on From the Touchline for 90 Minutes. You can get us on Blog Talk Radio as well as PackSportsPage.com. Listeners, you can call in and talk with us live, 760-283-0846. And I guess now any Liverpool fans that do want to come call in, we are looking for somebody with distress in their voice. So if you are sad and upset about that, we want to talk to you because we want to hear how sad you are. But you know, moving on from Liverpool, and let's just talk a little bit more about Man City and you know, kind of they've kind of quietly positioned themselves in this. You can hear a lot about them. They just were steady all year. You know, great player in Yaya Toure, who we're going to talk about here just next. But, you know, they just kind of hung in there, and they were never out of it, but they were never really, you know, a bunch of points ahead. They were just kind of always hanging right there, and you know, here we are sitting about to name them the champions for the second time in 3 years. Any thoughts on that, Aaron?
Yeah, I think they really had a problem when Sergio Aguero got hurt over the wintertime, and that's when they kind of things began to unravel just a little bit for them. But like you said, Stubber, everybody was talking about Chelsea, and people were really, I think, surprised by how much Liverpool had improved, so they kind of became the stars. And also there was the constant distraction in Manchester with Moyes and all that. So, you know, that City, meanwhile, are just plugging away and winning the points. And in the fall, everyone was like, oh, it's going to be City. For sure it's going to be City. And then Aguero goes down. They have a couple injuries. And then they start to struggle a little bit. But now they're right back on top, and they're going to take the title. And, you know, you look at their squad, and honestly, I can't talk about Manchester City without mentioning Yaya Toure. If Luis Suarez doesn't have the season he's having, I think Yaya Toure is your first man in any 11 you have in that team. That guy is absolutely one of the best midfielders on the planet, hands down, I think. I mean, just the strength, the power, his composure, he's amazing. He just dominates everywhere. And I think City are half the team with him not in the lineup.
Yeah, I would agree, you know, 100%. I think Pellegrini's done a great job with this team, you know, and I would agree. Aguero is a huge part of winning, and he has been named fit for the game against Aston Villa, which is not good for Villa or Liverpool.
Right.
And the combination of those two players, I mean, let's be honest, David Silva is one of the top midfield players in the, you know, in the league. There's no question. You know, Nasri can come on, and although I dislike him, I think he can be a dangerous player for them. And you know, they've definitely got a team that is worthy of winning this title. And as I said, I think Pellegrini has done a great job. He obviously has a better relationship with his players than the previous manager, who I won't mention. You know, and you know, the previous manager was not a very well-liked person at the club. And so I think Pellegrini came into a situation where, you know, he just had to show a little bit of human compassion towards people and actually talk to them, and he was going to be successful. And he's done that. So, you know, I think that it's a good squad, and I think in Yaya Toure and Sergio Aguero, and Dom Silva. You have three of the top players, not just in the Premier League, but I think in the world. And
absolutely.
You know, if you talk about Yaya Toure, first of all, you don't see many. We talk about the old school box to box midfielders, and he truly is a box to box midfielder. He's very good defensively, and he's getting forward consistently. It helps when one of your strides travels you two-thirds of the pitch because you're such a huge man. But he's the first midfield player to score 20 goals in the Premier League since Frank Lampard did it. And
that's saying something.
It is saying something. So, in Yaya Toure, you just have a phenomenal player. And, you put him in there with David Silva, and, I mean, it's just a tough situation to play against that team.
Yeah, and City have, looking over their season, they've had a couple matchups where they played the bigger teams and things haven't worked out for them, but they're through all that. I mean, they're losing Liverpool, obviously, 3-2, and then their last loss before that was back in, early February, when they lost 1-0 to Chelsea. And then before that, Manchester City hadn't lost until early November when that surprised her to Sunderland. So they have put together a fantastic year, and Pellegrini's done a great job. I think the one thing fans are going to ask, or the ownership will ask, is that they'll have to do better in the Champions League next year, around a 16 exit, when the year before that going out in the group stage. That said, they did have quite the group with Bayern Munich and everything, but still that will be their next challenge, and we'll just see where they go. And that leads into transfer window, of course. But it is tough sometimes because you look at a team like Manchester City and you say, well, you bought everybody, you just made this team. But it's another task like Pellegrini has to take all those guys and make them work. And like you said, last year Mancini was losing it.
Yeah, right? You can say they bought all the players. You could say the same thing about the early Chelsea sides when Mourinho was there, and they did. But managing all those players is the trick.
Yeah.
And
that's,
obviously Mancini couldn't do it. And Pellegrini did. So that's the difference. And it is very, a manager at that level is managing personalities, egos. He's managing different game, how many games that a player is playing, and there's a lot to that. Sir Alex Ferguson was a genius at it, and that's the trick to being a manager at that level. So and you can there's a man named David Moyes. You can consult about that, and he can tell you. He can tell you that now he realizes that that's fairly important in the equation. So, but he'll be telling you that from his garden as he is digging carrots out. So, let's talk. We've talked about the top of the table here. One going on the top of the table that I think is slightly interesting is that you've got a Manchester United team that with a win. With a win this week and a Tottenham loss on goal differential, you're going to see Manchester United go into the Europa League. And, I think that's a situation that a lot of United fans are hoping doesn't happen, because they would like to, they'd like to be in the same situation Liverpool's in and not have to deal with any midweek games next year. But not an easy task. Southampton away for Manchester United. Is a tough game, and it's not going to be easy for them to get that result. But at the same time, the question is, do they want to get that result, Aaron?
Yeah, it's a great point, Todd. I think, it's tough to say what Giggs will put out there. He's got all kinds of options. I mean, Luke Wilson looks like a great option right now after his performance. But, you don't know, and honestly, you look at the table, and if anyone's confused, it's they will get that Europa League spot because Manchester City won the League Cup, so that spot then goes down to the seventh place position. So
that's
the Manchester City getting that League Cup title, which is normally puts you in the Europa League. Typically, it would just be Everton in fifth place, but sixth place will get it as well.
Yeah, I guess. You are right. Well, let's not talk about the top of the table then. Let's go to the bottom of the table.
Oh no, I want to finish. I want to finish out on the United thing. Because, I mean, if they do get the win and do have to go to the Europa League, I mean, we know what kind of games, then you're in Latvia, on a Thursday night, and then having to play in the Premier League, and then 2 days after that.
No, and that is the problem. And I think we talked about it last week, but just to touch on it real quick, for Manchester United, financially, they don't need those games in the Europa League.
Right.
And so this is not just – I would prefer that they don't do that, but, you know, we'll see what happens. Tottenham has Villa at home, and, you know, that's going to be Tim Sherwood's last in charge of Tottenham, which has been a, you know, it's been a, it's crazy that they're even in the position they're in after all they've gone through this
year. Absolutely. They are a fascinating club. We'll have to talk more about them and their transfer when the transfer kind of debacle that they had over the whole year. I mean, Soldado has not had a good season.
No, and they've dealing with ABB, who was a punching bag for Sam Lady and I here on the show from in his time in charge. But you know, it's amazing that they're in the position that they're in. But let's just scoot down to the bottom of the table, and let's first of all talk about the team that didn't find relegation. And Gus Poyet, what a job he did at Sunderland in the last few weeks of this season. Unbelievable to me, Heinzen. Unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, you think a huge game against West Brom, and they needed the win, and obviously West Brom would have been completely secure if they get it, and Sunderland pull it out. And, you know, that's on top of a huge win, obviously, at United earlier. I mean, they had a lot of pressure on them, and a couple of United players, ex-players, Wes Brown, John O'Shea, guys that knew what it takes. And I feel like every year there's a team with all this weight on their shoulders and no chance. We've seen it before in Wigan. We've seen it a couple times in Fulham, who unfortunately didn't get through this one. But Sunderland pulling it out, I would have thought they would have been dead very few weeks ago.
Yeah, and nobody thought it. I mean, really, they didn't win a game in March. They started off April with a 5-1 loss to Spurs and a 1-0 loss to Everton, and it just didn't look good for Gus Poyet. I mean, he got this job with Sunderland. He had been with Brighton and Hove Albion in the Championship and almost got into the Premier League with them, but wasn't able to really get over the hump with them. So here he is, his first year in the Premier League, and it looks like he's going down. But the 2-2 draw with Man City at the Etihad led to the 2-1 shock win at Stamford Bridge against Chelsea. They smashed Cardiff 4-0, and then they go to Old Trafford and they win 1-0, and here they are just sitting on this game against West Brom, and they stay up, and they win 2-0. I mean, I don't know. I think Gus Poyet did great things at Brighton and Hove Albion. He did a very good job there. They weren't able to get up, but this job that he's done here, and I would say this. I'm not a man who checks odds, but if you would have checked the odds in the middle of April as to who was going to – if you would have checked the odds before the game against Man City as to who was going to get relegated, I'm guessing – that there would have been some pretty decent odds that Sunderland were going down with the remaining schedule they had
and
the form they had been in. I mean, they didn't win a game in March, not one.
And they were just getting destroyed all over the place. And you said it best. I mean, the results that he's gotten from those players is just unbelievable, because at that point, everybody knows it's a sinking ship, and I'm sure he probably just thought, I'll coach in the Championship. I've done it before. I'll do it again, and I might just, you know, get my players going here, get them excited, get them on for the next season, about who wants to be with the team, who's going to be with the club when we move on. And he pulled it off. And, I mean, now they're going to stay in the Premier League. He's going to be a Premier League coach next year. It's amazing.
It is amazing. And with him winning that game there, it solidified the relegation teams and Norwich.
Norwich are down
there. Sent down. So we've got Norwich, Fulham, who we had already decided, and Cardiff was already decided going down. West Bromwich Albion, the claim of where I spent my time in England when they were in the Championship, that's where I was training at, stay up. And they're very, very close. It's been a disaster year for me in terms of my team, Manchester United, being just awful. And if West Bromwich Albion, the team I trained with when I was in England, went down, and I think I would have just had to quit soccer altogether. Happy to see them staying up. Hull staying up, not bad. I'd like to see that.
Yeah, Steve Bruce getting things done there.
Yeah, he is getting things done. And so, you know, the Premier League is set in terms of who's going down, and we know two teams coming up, Leicester winning the Championship. Actually running away with the Championship, I would say there, Aaron. And Burnley also coming up. It'll be good to see Leicester back.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
And it'll be great to see them coming back in. They actually smashed the Championship with 102 points. They only lost six of 46 games. And Burnley will be coming up on 93 points. Now, one of my favorites. My favorite parts of English soccer is the promotion playoff. And it's just, to me, I think it's just one of the great things that they have. I wish we had that in our American sports. The promotion playoffs, let's just go back before the promotion playoffs. Last weekend, and let's go back to Brighton Hove Albion, Gus Poyet's former club. They're sitting 1 point off, 2 points off of the final promotion playoff spot behind Reading, and they snuck in, really. They snuck in. Brendan O'Bellion didn't lose a match in April, and on the last day of the season, needing a win, 92nd minute winner from Jose Ulloa at Nottingham Forest, coupled with the Reading draw at home against Burnley, and it sent him into the playoffs. Just remarkable, Aaron. Just remarkable stuff. You couldn't write this script.
Yeah, I mean, this is the best part about it. The money that is at stake and the pressure that's on these players who, in some cases, for a long time, have not been in the spotlight for, in some cases, years. And some players have never even been in the Premier League. They watch, they see it, they know some of the guys in other leagues, players come down, get traded from other clubs, and they hear about it. Now they get a chance to play on the big stage, and for fans as well. It's just such an emotional thing. You know, now you get to have Chelsea, Liverpool, Manchester United, all these players come to your stadiums. And the money that's gained, the players that they can add, it's just extraordinary. That's why we love it. That's why we watch this league so much, because of all the drama and how close and tight things get.
Well, and as we said, it's a cruel game, and it'll just keep us coming. The one out of four times you're on the good end of it, and it just keeps you coming back. It's
right.
Like a bad disease, this game, but it does just keep us back. And sure, it's really, you know, in these lower levels, as you said, there's so much more at stake. And, you know, Manchester United doesn't go to the Europa League, and they're okay with it.
Right.
Brighton & Hove Albion, they would sacrifice anything just to get a seat into the Premier League just because of the money and what it brings to their club and to their fans and to their players. And so there's just so much more at stake, you know, when you're watching this. I almost feel like, you know, just to put an Americanized spin on it, it's almost like watching a Little League World Series, you know?
Yeah.
What it means to the
players. And
yeah, there's just so much more at stake, and it's just fantastic. So those promotion playoffs did actually start. Brighton & Hove Albion took a 1-0 lead over Derby County, but are now 2-1. Derby came back 2-1 on an aggregate after the first round. Little Steve McLaren there, a little name blast from the past, former England manager. What a fall from grace he took. And that's what happens when you're terrible, Aaron.
Yeah, Steve McLaren, haven't heard his name in a long time.
No, you haven't. Yeah. You really haven't. Not unless you're going back and watching old videos of England trying to qualify for a World Cup or a European Championship. That would be the only time you could see him. We've got, in the one promotion playoff in the semifinal, we have Derby County with a 2-1 aggregate lead over Brighton & Hove Albion after the first round. We've got Queen's Park Rangers facing Wigan in a battle between two teams that came down last year, and that match is actually here slated to start in about 15 minutes, Aaron.
Yeah, that's going to be going. Queen's Park Rangers, both those teams are actually, I mean, Wigan having such the run that they did in the FA Cup, winning the FA Cup last year with Roberto Martinez. QPR just couldn't seem together, even with old Harry Redknapp, couldn't seem to put it together last year and went down, despite the money and despite the players that they had. Trapped and Jisung Park last year. I mean, I was really surprised, honestly, when they picked up Harry Redknapp that QPR even went down. But you knew going down, especially with the backing that they had, that they were going to be right back in it. And I'm surprised they didn't win the league, to be honest. But
I'm sure.
My hat to Leicester City, that's for sure. But QPR, I mean, you know, those are two talented sides. Both those teams deserve to be in the Premier League.
Well, and let's be honest, we need Harry Redknapp in the Premier League.
We need Harry Redknapp in the Premier League with him
twitching and, he's like a character. He's like a character in the next Harry Potter movie. It's just unbelievable.
It's fantastic.
This guy. It seems like he's been around forever.
Oh, yeah. He's got some history here, too, in Seattle.
Yeah, he sure does. Seattle
Very
Redknapp.
Sure does.
He does have some history here in Seattle. And, I'm looking forward to seeing that QPR Wigan, seeing how that goes. Just always fun to see these promotion playoffs. You're listening to Todd Stauber and Aaron Heisen here on From the Touchline for 90 Minutes. get us on Blog Talk Radio as well as backsportspage.com. You can call in the show and talk with us live, 760-283-0846. No callers today, Aaron. Even our scheduled ones aren't calling in.
Oh, well, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, it's all part of the course
people
at this
busy.
Point. But Pete Ewing will be calling in at 11 o'clock to talk all things Seattle Sounders and MLS. Pete Ewing, Seattle Sounders TV personality and the head coach at Seattle University for their men's soccer program. Looking forward to having him on. He's always a great guy to talk to. He's going to have a lot of great insight. You know, he's in the locker room quite a bit. Looking to get some insight on maybe Clint Dempsey.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe a little DeAndre Yedlin as well.
Could be a possibility.
Could be a possibility. You never really know. But
I'd like to hear Pete's thoughts too on the just quickly on the USA team, how he thinks they're going to fare.
Let's jump over to the rest of Europe and just go over who we have coming into the Champions League for this year. Most spots have already been determined. Most of the big spots coming out of the big leagues there. Out of England, we're looking at Manchester City, Chelsea, and Arsenal. Any of those four teams, what do you think of them heading in next year to the Champions League?
Well, I think if I had to really put some money down, I'd probably go with Chelsea just because they have Jose Mourinho. I think City, obviously it depends on what kind of group they get in. I mean, that's the first thing. It's tough to say right now, but if somebody just said guess a team, I'd just say Jose Mourinho. I mean, he is known as the eternal semifinalist in parts of Spain, but he gets some power. He knows the tournament. He knows the pacing and the timing, and he's got the most experience. Pellegrini, he can do it, but, you know, City proved they're one or two players off of actually making a deep run. I mean, they're not quite there yet, but Liverpool, I think it's going to be a whole other ballgame.
Yeah, well, I think for me, when I asked you the question, as I was asking it, I said, gosh, it's going to be Chelsea again. And it's for the same reasons. Mourinho does know the tournament. He's one of the most successful coaches in the history of the Champions League. And I think you'll see that. He just will figure out a way to get that done. Liverpool needs to, if they're going to have any success, they've got to figure out how to defend better because they're just going to have a tough time. Arsenal, I believe, will be fine until January, as usual, and then they'll melt down.
It's just such an interesting thing with them.
Well, you know, it's just something about Arsene Wenger. I don't think he likes the holiday times, because after every holiday time, Arsene Wenger's teams collapse, and I don't expect anything different from him. Let's jump over to the La Liga. A lot of action going on there, obviously with Atletico, Real being in the Champions League final. Barca will be back in the Champions League, which will be... it'll be interesting to see what happens to Barca. You know, Dani Alves potentially moving to Manchester City.
Right.
You know, we'll see how that goes. But the surprise spot there, Athletic Bilbao. One of the lower echelon teams in Spain, but they've just done such a great job. I actually in my time in Spain, the one game I saw was between Real Madrid and Athletic Bilbao. It was in Madrid, and I was in the away stands with the Bilbao fans, and they were insane. They were literally insane. They were hanging off rafters, and they would have fallen. They would have hurt themselves. Been on it before, so I'm not sure they knew what was about. If they fell the rafters, the energy from their fans was fantastic, and I think it's always exciting when you see this, a team like Bilbao, earn this. Because, again, we just talked about this. Their fans, their players, it's a chance to be on a completely different stage, and the appreciation they have for it. I mean, Real and Barca, they're expected to get in. But at Bilbao, this is a big thing for their club and really cool to see that.
Yeah, and they've done a tremendous job the last couple of years just producing really strong youth. I mean, you think of Juventus title-winning forward right now, Fernando Llorente. Remember him a couple of years ago at Bilbao and what he did to Manchester United in the Europa League. And there's something special going on there right now with some of the players they're turning out and consistently, and the budget that they have compared to the clubs like Real Madrid, even Atletico Madrid, that they're spending is just minuscule. So you love seeing that. You love seeing those teams succeed. You kind of think about the Ajax in the mid-90s and what they did, even though they're a bigger club than Bilbao. But it's pretty impressive. So I'm interested to see how they do next year. The tough part about those guys is what they have to get through is they have maybe a year or two to actually do something, to go for it, to win something. And if they don't, then their teams are kind of gutted and they have to start over again. But for them to be back as quickly as they have been, that's pretty impressive. So it'll be good, interesting to see.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see. And, you know, I think obviously if you look at that group of teams coming out of Spain, you know, obviously Barca, Real, Atletico are going to be, you know, favorites to do something there. But
I think Atletico, honestly, is going to be – I think they may be one and done. I think they're going to be out of the Champions League next year real quick. I personally think that. I don't know if Simeone will remain. We definitely know Diego Costa is not going to stay. Who else could get picked off from that side this year? And we know they have some financial issues. So that will be interesting. They could be a totally different side come the fall, group stage. Don't even, you know, maybe they get a couple wins, maybe they finish third, maybe they go into the Europa League, I don't know. But that's my guess. If Simeone isn't there, and we know Diego Costa isn't there, it'll be a fight for them.
Yeah.
That's my guess. I think Bilbao does better than Madrid. Yeah, what I think. That's my guess. I'm saying it.
He did say it. He is saying it, and he said it.
Yeah, that's what I'm going for. I think Atletico Madrid are. I think we've seen what they're doing. They're going to be in the Champions League final, obviously huge deal. And now we watch the dismantling of the team.
Yeah, well, could be interesting. Out of the Bundesliga going in there, we've got of course Bayern Munich, Borussia Dortmund, Schalke, and Bayer Leverkusen. Nothing really new there.
No.
I think the Bundesliga is gaining strength, though, as far in terms of their teams and the level and the players that are going there. And I think it's a great place to play. The crowds are very good. But, you know, I think, to me, it's going to be very interesting, you know, to see what Bayern Munich, what kind of performance they put in next year. I think that, obviously, Pep Guardiola is going to be reeling from the defeat and to Real Madrid. And, you know, I'll be interested to see what they're able to do. But, you know, don't count out Dortmund. You just can't count out Dortmund.
But they've
made a deep run here, you know, for the last couple of years. And I think you've got – I think the German teams, just because of their blue-collar approach and, you know, their ability to play in poor weather on a consistent basis, there's a lot of factors that go in. Because, like you say, Serbia on a December night, playing a game and the temperature is 18 degrees and you've got, you know, people throwing quarters at you or whatever they have there in Serbia. And so, you know, it's not easy to play in those games. So I think those German teams are a little bit tougher, and I think that you've seen them having a lot of success here in the last couple of years.
Oh, absolutely. And they've actually, you know, Borussia Dortmund and Bayern Munich have obviously ran away with the league title, but it's an interesting game they even have coming up in the German Cup final. Borussia Dortmund won the German Super Cup at the beginning of the season, and then they play each other in the fall, which I actually happened to see that game. So I was at that game in the fall in Germany and watched Bayern Munich dismantle Dortmund 3-0 at Dortmund. Amazing crowd, 80,000 strong, beautiful stadium just right there, Signal Iduna Park, wonderful place. And then, you know, and then Bayern Munich wins the title, they come back. They're not playing for anything, so Dortmund destroys them in Munich, and now they've got the German Cup final. So two really strong teams. Bayern Munich, obviously, the best one. Both could make a huge run at the Champions League. Lewandowski leaves Dortmund, though, goes to Munich, so they lose him. But there's going to be more. Are they going to lose Marco Reus to United? I don't know. I mean, I don't know what kind of Dortmund team, but how many youth guys they have there? I mean, they're
that's an amazing structure. The structure at Dortmund is well, they're a team that they will lose Lewandowski, but you never know who they've got coming up. So.
Exactly. And Roy, they may lose Royce, too. They may lose him. That guy's a phenomenal talent. And, you know, they already took Gertz the year before, Bayern Munich.
Right.
Unbelievable. He had to warm up in the tunnel. He couldn't even warm up out on the field.
Wow.
When he came out onto the field, it was so loud. The crowd just booed him. He's a Dortmund guy, Dortmund kid.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, that's moving on to the Serie A, and there's something missing from this group. And there's two things missing from this group that you don't see this very often.
No.
You've got Juventus, Roma, Napoli going into the Champions League next year, not a team from Milan. And really, let's be honest, Italy didn't have a great showing in the Champions League this year. And what's going on in Italy? Why is this? What's happening? Are the players down? Is the style too slow? What do you think the situation is here?
It's interesting, Todd. I think one of the biggest problems that they have is kind of the finances. They've had a lot of financial issues there and some scandal going on. And, you know, they had a referee scandal a few years back, and the league's kind of suffered from the heydays. Remember in the mid-90s when Italy was just crushing everybody. But, you know, their national team is still strong, so they've got that going for them. But the Serie A definitely has a little bit of an image problem, half-empty stadiums or some violence and stuff. And, you know, they'll come back. Antonio Conte in Juventus has a great team right now, even though they did lose to Benfica in the semifinals, the Europa League. But it's a strong team, and they've got a lot of great players. It will be interesting to see how Milan will rebuild. Inter Milan, we know, has new ownership. That could be something different, so we could kind of keep your eye on them. I'm not sure what's going to happen with AC Milan, frankly, right now. They really look like they're struggling.
Well, yeah, you know, it's come out this morning that Clarence Seedorf is in, you know, danger of losing his job, which, you know, I wouldn't disagree in terms of how things have finished, but, you know, I think the Italian league, I think to me, the pace of it is a little slow. And I think when they get in these games against teams that are just counterattacking so quickly and just the physicality of it, I just don't think they're really ready to me, when watching the games this year, it just didn't really look like these Italian teams could adjust to the physicality, the pace of the game when they got in these Champions League games. They just seemed, they were just a little bit off, and they just weren't quite at the level. So it'll be interesting to see if Juventus, I think Juventus is the team that could make a splash. It'll be interesting to see if they can do that. But we're going to move a little further south into Portugal here. And, right on the heels of the World Cup, Portugal looking to have a great run with Ronaldo, but you've got Benfica, Sporting Lisbon, and Porto. You know, the usual stuff.
The usual.
But
yep.
I'm going to put a little Seattle spin on the Sporting Lisbon, because leading scorer Freddy Montero, 13 goals, one of the top scorers in the Portuguese league, former Seattle Sounder player, and you know, it's good to see him doing so well. And you know, he's leading scorer on the team, 13 goals, 19 games. You can't really argue with numbers, and he's done them.
No, it's the Portuguese league is interesting. You know, we don't get to see a lot of it over here in the U.S. unless you really, really search it out. But every time you see those teams in the Champions League, they're full of talent, full of young players, and that's actually what brought Mourinho to the stage is when he won with Porto. Everyone was like, "What the heck? How do you win with Porto? You haven't seen those teams since Eusebio's days, you know."
Wow.
So
we blown out the road.
You know, Eusebio.
One,
I mean, just passed actually a few months ago. Remember Ronaldo giving them the tip for that when he got World Player of the Year. But
yeah.
The Portuguese league is a lower tier league, and these guys are the three big clubs, and they're in it just about every single year. But
I think you find these teams making a dent every time.
You do.
They, you know,
absolutely.
I mean, you got them in the final of the Europa League.
You're
you got them going
right.
on. You know, and I think it is one of the lower leagues. I would agree with that. But you consistently see one of these teams getting through to the round of 16 consistently.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's no question. And I think it's one of the first place people look for their talents. I mean, they are scouted consistently. It's consistently players coming out from these spots. So there's no question. It's a great setup league. It's kind of like the Dutch league a bit, where people just come in and raid the teams from the other top four leagues. But you're right. Benfica, Porto, Sporting Lisbon, not as much in the last couple of years, but, you know, things can change, and they're constantly coming out and doing well in Europe.
Yeah, well, and, you know, with Freddie Montero there, a little Seattle connection.
You know he does,
yeah.
There's no denying his talent. He was a talented player. I mean, work rate sometimes, you're questionable,
yeah.
I thought.
Well, I don't think Siggy Schmidt really pushed him in his work rate as much as he probably was. So, you know, he's moved on and he's done well, and I expect to see him starting to get some looks as Colombia looks to qualify for the next World Cup.
Yes.
I think that he'll start getting some looks there. So moving on to France, which Aaron, you just spent some time in France.
Yeah,
there,
sure
didn't
did.
You?
A couple months in Paris, watched PSG as much as I could. Ibrahimovic, by far the best player on the field. There's no denying it. He's absolutely phenomenal.
Well, in PSG, they're our main team to talk about here in the Champions League. But you also have a Monaco and a Lille going into the Champions League. Good to see Monaco in
yep.
there. Obviously, they splashed a lot of money
they
out
sure
in the last couple of years, and that's paid off. They'll be getting that money back as they collect the gate receipts from their champion in these games. PSG, I have to say, I thought they were going to beat Chelsea.
I
was so disappointed when they didn't. I do believe Ibrahimovic is a great player. Cavani, I mean, they just, you know, I think they've done a great job. I like Laurent Blanc, obviously. He's a former United player.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just so disappointed. Talk to me about the run you see them making here in this next Champions League.
Absolutely. Well, it is interesting, Todd. The big point about PSG is you're coming to a wonderful city, you're coming to a huge club, but you are playing in the French League, which is a little bit weaker than the big-time league. So how long can you hang on to these players? I don't know. You remember last summer, Ibrahimovic was actually trying to move on, to get out of his contract. He'd won the French League. He'd been there and done that. Now they were bringing on Edinson Cavani, and could they even work together at the same time? You still have Lavezzi in there. You just have so much talent. But, you know, he stays, and PSG pays big-time money for their players. So, you know, how can I answer this? How far can they make it? I see him as back in the quarterfinals, no question. Depending on what happens to Ibrahimovic. But he was absolutely – I got to tell you actually really quick about this goal that I saw. Just let me do it because I just couldn't believe my eyes. I couldn't believe it. So the ball comes in. This is against Bastia, one of the lower-level French teams. Ball's out on the right-hand side, gets crossed in, is deflected, so it goes way up in the air, and it's coming down right about in the middle of the penalty box, about 12 yards out. Ibrahimovic has his back completely to the goal, center backs all over the back of him, and Ibrahimovic reaches up with his right leg, knee bent, heel out, and just lashes it with the back of his heel to the far post. Keeper doesn't even see it coming. Goal, 8 minutes into the game. And then walks back. It was ridiculous. I mean, he's just on another level.
He's certainly well-known for scoring, you know, some of the great goals that we've seen in the last few years.
Oh, Sweden, England, remember
yeah,
that?
He's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
He is a great player. I see them back in the quarterfinal as
yep.
well. And I see them as a team, you know, even 2 years ago they were knocked on the door. And I see them as a team that's going to continue to build. You know, I see them kind of as the Bayern Munich of a few years ago when the rest of the German league hadn't really caught up
right.
and they were very dominant. I think that they will be able to sustain it. They have a ton.
Yeah.
They have endless amounts of money at PSG. You know, they've obviously you know done well in Europe, and I think that you know the question of will they be able to sustain it playing in the Ligue 1. I think that they will because I think they have the funds to do it, and I think that it's a desirable place to play. I mean, obviously, you had David Beckham here a couple years ago. He could have played anywhere in the world, and that was the club he chose to play at.
Right. Beautiful city, beautiful place.
Yep.
Blanc just signed a new contract. I didn't mention that, but he's got a new contract there. The one thing also I didn't mention is they and Manchester City are being looked at right now for UEFA for possible fines and for Champions League.
Yeah.
So we'll see what Platini decides to do.
We know how that goes.
Yeah,
Platini's French.
It'll be a little bit of a fine. I mean, some players like Wenger is saying that he'd like to see him really get a – well, he's talking about Manchester City, but –
Well, Wenger's too worried about that. He should have started coaching on January 1st because his team went from winning the English Premier League title to now they're talking about him being fired once again.
Actually, now that we're all back on this, I wanted to ask you, do you think if doesn't win the FA Cup for whatever reason, if they somehow fumble it against Hull City, do you think his future at Arsenal could change?
If they lose that, it could, yeah. But
I
think they'll win. I think he'll stay for one more year, which is great.
You think he'll stay for one more year? You don't think he'll stay for more than that?
Well, I think he'll get one more year. If he doesn't have a good year next year, he's gone. But I kind of like it when he's just kind of floating around and he does well enough to get his hopes up. And then you can just see his soul is just defeated every time it happens. You get to see it every year. I mean, it's just fantastic because the arrogance of him and everything else, it's great.
He is one of the great characters of English soccer. He's like no one else.
Right.
Just
no, I agree. If we moving on from France, just couple teams coming out of Holland, the typical Ajax and Feyenoord. You know, I don't see either of these teams doing anything big. Although Ajax, you know, you could see them maybe potentially getting into a quarterfinal.
Yeah.
If you go to Russia, You just never know how these teams arrived at their Champions League spot. Were they purchased? You know, did people disappear to have this happen? And, you know, it's a little dodgy up there.
Interesting.
So we do have St. Petersburg in, and we do have Lokomotiv Moscow in. And
Big teams.
You know, big teams. And, you know, Zenit's done some damage here in the last couple of years. It's been one of the better teams. But I don't see any of those teams doing anything really. Only one other team really of note to mention, and that would be Celtic, who always put in, you know, it's always just a spirited effort in the Champions League for one chance. They play in a league that is probably similar to that of the over-30s league that Aaron and I play in here in Seattle, where you've got one really good team, everybody else is terrible. And I think that actually some of the teams like over-30s team league could maybe compete with some of the teams at the bottom of the Scottish Premier League. It's just, just not a good league. And the one problem with Rangers going away in that country was it's just taken away one of the great rivalries,
yeah.
I think, in world football, but also in sport.
One of the oldest rivalries, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, one of the oldest rivalries. But so you do have Celtic coming in. So
And there's also the Turkish league, Fenerbahce.
Fenerbahce will be coming in. And then you do see the Turkish teams, you know, making a little dent here and there. They're always always coming in and doing a little. But yeah, you know, overall, that's the that is the breakdown there for who's coming in. You're going to have your teams qualifying in,
mm-hmm.
and you're always going to get, you know, maybe, you know, we've talked about Serbia a lot. Maybe
Serbian
surprises. Oh, yeah. We just threw all over Serbia today.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, you just never know. I mean, that's the beauty of it. You just get some
great surprise. Yeah, you do never
Basel. Know. FC Basel from Switzerland. They were another really great surprise. Remember a couple years ago.
Yep.
They had some
so
good players.
You're right. Exactly. Well, they beat Manchester United. That's why they were surprised.
Yeah, they were.
thanks for bringing that up there.
sorry about that.
You know, you are going to have your teams qualifying in, and you do have those teams, the Basels, the Fenerbahce's, that are capable of, you know, doing some damage. As we've mentioned here, it's a cruel game, and funny things can happen in football.
Absolutely.
If you're listening to Todd Stauber and Aaron Hines and here on From the Touchline for 90 minutes, you can get us on Blog Talk Radio as well as backsportspage.com. Listeners, you can call in the show, talk with us live at 760-283-0846. Speaking of callers, we are just about 8 minutes away from Pete Fewing calling in, Seattle Sounders TV personality and Seattle University men's head soccer coach. He's done a great job there, by the way. We'll talk to him just briefly after that. But just coming back to the program just this last year, winning the WAC with Seattle U and then going on the road and winning their first NCAA playoff game at Creighton. Pete Fewing is one at every level he's ever been at. He's a great guy. We're really looking forward to having him on here in a few minutes. And when he comes on, Aaron, we will be moving out of Europe. Anything else here in England that you would love to bring up here?
I think for me the big thing is just the FA Cup. I know we already touched on it, but that's kind of. There's that and also the future of a couple of players. Actually, maybe I'll just jump on that first. Just kind of the announcement today about where John Terry and Ashley Cole will go into Chelsea, if that will be a possibility.
I did actually read today that it looks like they potentially Ashley Cole, John Terry, and Frank Lampard could all be staying potentially.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's an aging squad, but it can't hurt to have these guys.
Well, no, exactly. It's kind of like, you know, when the United team, when they started to push some of those guys had to go when Nicky Butt departed, when Phil Neville departed. You keep the other guys around, the Gary Neville, Paul Scholes, obviously Giggs and all that, but it's kind of the same deal. I mean, these guys are, even if they're not going to be playing as much, which they won't be. Like, you know, you didn't see Lampard that much this year, but he's still a force on the in the locker room.
Yeah, of course, and I think you need, as you rebuild your squad, which I think Chelsea is, you know, clearly in the process of doing, you've got to, the players that are coming in have to understand the culture that's been created by Mourinho and the rest of the players, and who better to do that than, you know, than a Frank Lampard and Ashley Cole and a John Terry, although I'm not sure I would want John Terry influencing any human being that I was going to be associated with, but... you know, the guy has been there. He's been there through all of their success. And, you know, he has been a great player there, no question.
Yeah.
There could be some players coming into the Premier League as well. There's,
right.
you know, Arbiola's looking at it. There's just some players looking at it. A couple things here. You've got Diego Costa has injured his hamstring, you know, for a couple weeks here, obviously ahead of the Champions League final. He's gonna miss the game this weekend, which is unfortunate because Atletico
yeah.
could secure the trophy with a win over Malaga.
Yeah, a big deal.
So it is a big deal. He scored 36 goals in all competitions, but
yeah, he'll be ready. There's no question. But they do need this win this weekend, Todd, because it's at Barcelona the weekend after that, and that is. Not going to be an easy deal playing the second place team like the likes of Barcelona, even though they've had their struggles this year. But I think Simeone's obviously he's injured and he's got to rest him. If there is a game to rest him, it's this one this weekend. But it is it's a massive game for them.
Yeah, definitely. So you've got that going on. Other headlines here coming out of Europe. You've got Wayne Rooney claiming he's fit for the World Cup. Is that the first time he's been fit in 4 years?
Always important.
Yeah. I didn't think that he'd been fit. You know, you've got you've also got Sepp Blatter. He's going to go for re-election as the FIFA president. Any thoughts on that? I feel like it's time for this guy to move on.
Yeah. I honestly don't know who would be a huge replacement. I think Platini, I've heard his name thrown around, but I think he's pretty happy about where he is at. Blatter, the way the Brazil World Cup thing has gone down, with the stadiums not quite finished and stuff, I think that's got to be something that needs to be addressed. And I really don't know the protocols that FIFA have. What else can you say? I mean, you're weeks away, and these guys are still putting the finishing touches on the stadiums.
Yeah,
and that's
well,
a big deal.
You know, that's Brazil, though. You know, that's Brazil. They'll be painting the last stripe of the stadium as they kick off, but they'll get it done. Guaranteed, they get it done. It's just the way they operate in Brazil. It's just one of those places.
Interesting.
You'd like things to be a little more organized, but they just aren't. And at the end of the day, it's going to be a massive party. People are going to have a great time. The games are going to happen. I guarantee you games are going to happen. It's going to be a phenomenal World Cup. And, you know, I think, because let's be honest, we heard the same thing about South Africa. Oh, there's, you know,
right.
the stadiums aren't finished. Everybody's going to get murdered that even shows up. It was going to be this awful thing. Everybody was so concerned. And they got there. And, you know, from all accounts, it was one of the greatest World Cups ever. And so, you know, it's getting to be crunch time. But,
it is.
You know.
It was a little bit earlier when South Africa, too, they had their questions, and now it's like, you know, it's coming up on this May, it's May, and they're like, finish the stadium.
Yeah, well, it's getting a little tight. There's no question about that. It is getting a little tight, but I believe that they will get it sorted out. And
mm-hmm.
They'll have the stadiums ready. And I mean, it's a huge event for any country to host something of this nature. I don't think any country is going to take it lightly. And, you know, it's just
right.
the Brazilian people. It's just the way they are.
Right.
Well,
one other thing I wanted to mention, too, actually talking about Europe before we get on to peep viewing, but Javier Zanetti retirement from Inter Milan is a big deal, I think. You think he's one of the classiest defenders of ever to have played the game, phenomenal presence, played 862 games for Inter Milan, which is just
extraordinary. It is amazing. I mean, let's be honest. There's a lot of people that don't do anything in their life that many times. I mean, you know, 872 times to play with Inter Milan at the highest level. Zanetti, I feel like he's older than I am. He's another ageless wonder like Ryan Giggs. And he's just been
–
I actually, as a youth player, in my room.
Is that right?
That is right.
He is also Argentina's most capped player, by the way, with 145 caps in 2011. I mean,
yeah, amazing. I mean,
playing on that level.
I'm going to take you back to the early 90s into my high school bedroom and my posters scene. And
yeah, who else is there?
Yeah, Marco van Basten was there.
Yeah,
I was a big fan. I was a big fan of Ruud Gullit and Frank Rijkaard also. I was a big fan of all those Dutch guys.
All the Dutch guys in there.
Yeah, I definitely had all those guys. Zanetti was in there, for sure.
I like that. I had Klinsmann.
Jurgen Klinsmann.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Did you?
USA coach.
Well, the time has come. We are moving away from Europe, and we're going to move on to the MLS. I'm just clicking the microphone on here, and we got Pete Fueling on hold here, Hunt, and we're going to talk. We're going to talk about the Seattle Sounders, obviously the hottest team in the country. Day night, a goal from Kenny Cooper off of a service from Obafemi Martins to give them a 2-1 win over Dallas. Clearly the top team, and we brought in the man that we need to talk about this. Pete Fueling. Pete, are you there?
I am, Todd. Nice to be with you, buddy.
Yeah, thanks. So you got Aaron Hines in here with me. You're on live here from the touchline for 90 minutes here on Blog Talk Radio, Pete. And
hey,
we've got TV personnel for the Seattle Sounders, Peter, the very successful head coach of the Seattle University men's soccer team, Pete Fueling. Pete, we've got a ton of questions for you. Aaron and I are going to be fighting over the time to ask you these questions, but I just want to start off by asking you, obviously Sounders are the hottest team in the league right now. You've been around this team for a few years. How do you feel things are different this year in the locker room and the vibe of the team?
Okay, good question. And Aaron, good morning. You and I were both Huskies.
Yes, that's right.
Washington. Long time apart from each other, so nice to be with both of you guys this morning. Yeah, the locker room, Todd, has been dramatically different. The players talk about it. It's a very cohesive group. Clint Dempsey coming into that locker room last year and not really healthy and not necessarily at match fitness. He was fine, and obviously with his great career in England, I think everybody kind of sat back and wanted him to lead. I don't think he was ready for it at that moment. So the locker room, and now that Clint's played and been real successful, everybody's gelling. You know, when Keller and Lundberg were in the locker room together, it was not perfect. And once Freddie left and went to Chicago, Ziggy said it, the hierarchy was right. And the hierarchy's right now, and there's – you know, I've been really impressed with all the guys. Pineda played 54 times for Mexico, is a terrific leader and very humble. Ozzy has always been a leader, just does his job. And again, Clint Marcus, your old teammate, Todd, Marcus Hanneman is still the same big clown. He's always been his team-first guy. So I think every one of them. And Clint, you know, he is fantastic. It's been really fun to watch training, but he doesn't put himself ahead of anybody else. You know, Zach Scott booted him last year, and they kind of got into it, but that was sort of a Zach Scott's welcome to Seattle Sounders.
There's not many humans that have played soccer that Zach Scott hasn't kicked. So.
Yeah, you just have to know. I mean, I saw Freddie Montero. He just blasted Freddie Montero a couple years ago, and the whole practice sort of stopped. And Freddie was on there. It was a bad foul. And Zach just paced in circles for a couple of minutes. And Brian Schmetzer, the first assistant who coached Zach with the USL days, has been around him for, you know, Zach's been with the team for 12 years now. And Brian just went over and kind of stood nearby and, you know, okay, Zach, you done? You okay? And then Freddie gets up and he actually pats Zach like, yeah, that's my fault for letting you get that close to me. So, so locker room's good. Locker room's really good. It's fun to see, and they're all very motivated. You know, and another one, you mentioned Kenny Cooper getting that goal.
Yeah.
Kenny Cooper's not logged a lot of times, but he's time. But I think he has 74 goals in his MLS career. He and Chad Barrett, another one, Cam Weaver, who coached at Seattle U, has been around the league for, I think he's on his ninth year as a pro or eighth year as a pro now, and there's a lot of guys that want to play, but they're putting the team first, every one of them. I mean, you talk to Kenny Cooper, and does he want to play? Absolutely. Does he want to get on the field? So does Chad Barrett, but the locker room is right. We've all been on some teams where the locker room is right, and it makes for a very successful, enjoyable experience. That's where we are now.
I agree 100%, and you know, seeing the reports coming out of the Washington Post this week of Ted Johnson throwing teammates under the DC, you know, I feel Eddie Johnson is, you know, obviously he's never been a stellar citizen in any group he's been in, and I think maybe getting him out of here helped that chemistry little bit. And speaking of Lundberg and Keller, I would have liked to have seen to throw in Eddie Johnson in that mix. That would have been really interesting to see in that locker room. It would have been more of a war zone. But talk to
you know what I would have seen?
More.
I would have seen Keller grab both of them by the head and just smack their heads together and walk away. I think that's how that would have ended. Casey would have taken care of it. But
exactly.
Yeah. Eddie Johnson's a good kid, Todd. Eddie's a good guy, but he makes him – he really – he's his, sometimes he's his own worst enemy. I like him. I would have I liked him. I just – and, you know, he was on a low contract, but the equation for Eddie is, you know, poor behavior with your teammates. And I don't know all the details, but, you know, he's had scuffles, and it's been too bad. But poor behavior equals a poor performance, which equals a poor contract. It's a simple mathematical formula. If he bought in and tried to be a better teammate, he'd be more successful, and then he'd get a bigger contract. He's got a good contract now. I think he's $500,000. And
Well, and then you know he's poised to make a little bit of money this summer at the World Cup as well, depending on how the U.S. does. And you know, assuming that this latest problem with DC United doesn't cost him his spot, because Jurgen Klinsmann's been pretty upfront about the fact that he's looking at the guys, not just what they're doing on the field, but off the field. Because, you know, when we talk about chemistry, he also feels that that's a very, you know, a very important piece of the puzzle, which we all know that. But if we talk a little bit more about Clint Dempsey, I think you're spot on in saying, you know, he's come over here, people expected the world out of him. He didn't have a preseason. He wasn't fit. It was just never going to happen last year. But talk to me a little bit about, you know, he's come back from England. He spent his time in Fulham in the preseason. He came back. He was obviously sharp. He was obviously fit. And now he's really clearly developed a relationship with Obafemi Martins on the field. And just talk about that relationship, because it's really remarkable. You see the founders interchanging and playing in ways that they haven't before. And Obafemi just seems to really have settled in with Clint Dempsey.
Yeah, we met with Obafemi a couple of days ago, Friday, I think, last week. And both of them, I think, you know, here's the interesting thing, that the MLS is a different kind of league. It's different than the EPL, and we know that. I mean, that's another story. But I think Obafemi understands the league. Now, Obafemi has had his first preseason in his last three seasons. So for him coming in as well, getting that time with the players, and the Sounders do it right in preseason. They go off to Florida, they go off to Arizona, guys get bonding time, they do a lot of stuff together that's off the field, which is good. Ziggy's very good with that, so is Brian and Tommy and Ezra, so they put the team together well, so now they understand the league. I think last year Clint came in and tried to do some things that certainly wouldn't fly in the EPL and didn't fly in MLS, you know, just trying to be a little too tricky, and so I think he's kind of pulled back from that a little bit, although we've certainly seen some great skill from him, but they trust each other. Everybody now, you know, Pineda was saying that 80% of the time, now Pineda said 100% of the time, Ziggy said 80% of the time they look to go to Clint or Obafemi. So there is a great trust between the two. I think Obafemi has shown what a great teammate he is he's on 6 assists now. You know, he's been quite selfless, more so than we've seen in the past. And, you know, Todd, I think for both those guys, they both had such high expectations of everyone. You know, we get 38,000 people at a game. They both had such high expectations. You can't do that to one player. It's not that kind of sport. So, they read each other, trust each other, and then, you know, you watch training, and they're talking to each other about where they want the runs. And Obafemi does sometimes, you know, we were always taught to overlap, right, and go around. Wade Weber, one of our radio guys, calls it the underlap, because sometimes they run into each other's paths right in front of each other, but now they know they're going to do it, and it's gotten them a couple of goals. So, neither one of them cares who gets the goal. What's that, Todd?
Yeah. You can see it on the field with just they're looking to combine with each other. It's not happening by accident. I mean, they're looking to play off of each other, and, you know, I think it's just been a huge difference for the Sounders. I think they just look much, much better.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I think Pineda's been exceptional in getting them the ball, and he's been a night. We're real good down the middle, the spine of this team between Marshall and Traore at the back, and then Ozzie and Obafemi in the middle, and Clint Ozzy and Pineda, and then Obafemi and Clint up front. It's a very talented team. Lamar Nagel's done a great job too. You see sometimes where he scored a nice goal on his 27th birthday Wednesday night, and but you can see Clint. There was one time where Lamar, I'm not sure, about a week ago, took a ball off his chest and hit side netting, and Clint was right in front of the goal, and Clint was just throwing daggers at him with his eyes, and Nagel was walking away. But the good thing is they figured out, you know, and that's how it works. We've all played. That's how it works. You got to know what your teammate wants from you. So they're rolling right now.
Pete, who do you think give me one or two teams you think that will be, I mean, Seattle obviously looking the best, it's still early, but who do you think is going to be the kind of the rivals here coming towards the end of the season? Who looks the best to you or has the most potential?
Well, you can never count out the LA Galaxy. I think they kind of fiddle around for a while, and then they say, okay, we need this many points to get in the playoffs, and then once we get in the playoffs, Keane and Donovan just have another gear that they are comfortable switching into. So they are always, for me, a concern. And then Real Salt Lake, Jeff Kassar has done a good job of keeping that team cohesive. I think they'll be strong. New England, who we're facing Sunday, New England seems to be getting it right. Jay Heaps, the former Duke basketball player and Duke All-American soccer player. It's a fun one. You know, he's taken some pages, I'm sure, from Coach K.
You also have Seattle guy Kellen Rowe doing really well over there.
Yeah, it's fun. That's a franchise that, like Seattle, they have a partnership with the NFL, and it would be great if they can emulate what Seattle Sounders and Seahawks have done. I know we've separated now from the Seahawks, but that's a potential great program. They just got to embrace it a little bit more and get rid of the football lines.
Yeah.
I heard there was a practice where Tom Brady wanted to throw some passes, and so the Revolution had to go train somewhere else.
I got to fix that a little bit. That's interesting. The Revolution's an interesting one because that's a team that's really struggled the last couple of years, and I've even heard grumblings about, you know, the potential for them to move. Like you were saying, in the stadium, Tom Brady says something, and the whole team has to do something completely different.
Yeah. You know, and Aaron, it's the league is changing. You know, there are USL teams out there. The Sacramento USL teams, coached by Preki, right, who coached in the MLS, was MLS MVP and won it with Kansas City as a player, I think. They got 20,500 at their USL opener, and they're in the hunt for Graham Smith is their GM, and Graham Smith's a longtime agent in and around the league, and they are pushing. They're trying to force MLS's hand into giving them a franchise, and I think part of the evolution of the league is to make some moves, not necessarily just add new teams. I think, obviously, Chivas is one, and you're right. I think New England, DC United, when they get their new stadium, will be a better venue. I've been to RFK. It's a cool stadium, but it's a little beaten down, and it needs a lot of work, actually. So.
Yeah, it's exciting to see. And I had 20,000 fans for a USL game. That's unbelievable.
It is. You know what? I think they really approached it. I've had some conversations with them about players. I think they've really approached it in a way that is with an MLS mindset. And really one of the things that I think is a factor is that when Sacramento almost lost the Kings, I think that Kevin Johnson kind of redefined it. Just said, hey, we want to be a sports town. And so I think they've kind of parlayed that enthusiasm for making Sacramento a little bit of a bigger town. I think I could be completely wrong. I want to say 1.5 million in that area, so it's not a huge area. I could be totally wrong on that. I'm pulling that one out of my ear. But if someone can Google it and say what an idiot I am.
Getting Preki in there obviously helped that situation, and I think that was kind of the plan from the get-go. But just talk to me a little bit, Pete, about Toronto FC and Bradley and Defoe and that whole situation, and you know where do you see them? And then a little bit also, we've been talking the last couple of weeks about the Portland Timbers and their you know, their surprise start in the league.
Their surprise struggle, yeah. Well, Toronto, and Preki was there, they've had such turnover, and you hope that, Defoe and Bradley can be Donovan and Keane for that club. They had great support at the beginning. I think it's been a little hit and miss of late, of the last year or two, I think, with Bradley coming in and Defoe. We saw Jermaine Defoe scored 2 goals in 23 minutes in the Sounders home opener, and he, quality. It's just Stephen Fryer, goalkeeper, had no chance on either one of them. So hopefully they can get the pieces around them. Again, you know, one of the things that's making the Sounders so successful is they're not just watching Clint Dempsey and Obafemi play, and you can't just watch two guys play. Everybody's got to be a part in the process, defending-wise, possession-wise, moving the ball side to side, so getting service into those forwards. So hopefully, you know, and hey, maybe Clint got a little sniff of the MLS last year. Obafemi got a full year of the MLS. It might take Jermaine Defoe and Michael Bradley a little bit of time to get used to the MLS. You know, guys get kicked a lot more in this league. It's a much more physical league. College soccer players transition to the MLS, the hard ones, a little bit better because, you know, it's a physical league and no one cares. As a matter of fact, you know, if I'm a defender, if I'm Zach Scott and I'm in my 12th year with the MLS and I'm making 48,000, he's probably in the 60s now, and you're playing against Michael Bradley, who's getting, what, $6 million? Is that his salary?
Yeah.
I think there's some motivation to make him remember.
Yeah, somebody's getting kicked.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
definitely.
I will not
definitely.
Kick you. I won't kick you today if you buy me this car.
Exactly. Yeah, or just give me the one you have and go buy a new one. Obviously, we're huge rivals with Portland. They had such a
Portland, good
year.
Yeah.
Porter coming in and doing a great year. They're struggling mightily this year. What do you see is going on down there, Pete?
Yeah, I don't understand because there was a great buy-in for Caleb Porter, and there was for John Spencer when he came in as well at the beginning. You know, everybody loved John Spencer, and I remember, Nagby scoring that fantastic volley off the corner kick. He took a touch in the second one, he smashed it, and he ran straight to John Spencer and hugged him, and then all of a sudden that kind of ended, and I think maybe he lost the locker room a little bit. I don't think that's the case with Caleb at this point. But, you know, and they were, good Lord, I think they had, how many ties did they have last year? Like 16? And I know they just got their first win.
Yeah,
and I think they were 0-3-7 up until their first win. There was a website that said, has Portland won yet? .com, and you see what that means. It just said no. So they're just struggling a little bit. It's been unfortunate because, like Toronto, when they came into the league, they have such fantastic support. I always love going to that Portland game, and the energy is so good. So they're just, I don't know, they're not, they're giving up some late goals, and they just haven't quite got on track. The MLS is a league of streaks, though, and if a team gets a game, then they get another one. You know, it's a streaky league, so they certainly still have their fight and their grit. Their fans will not let them give half an effort. I think they were getting booed at one point last season, and the fans were getting pretty upset with the way it was going, and players respond to that. So, have you guys been to a game at Portland? Have you been down there?
Yeah, yeah. Well, Aaron, of course, Aaron played down there. Played for the Timbers for 2 years, or 3 years, Aaron. And I went to a game. I went down and saw Chicago. I believe it ended in a tie. So their game tied this year. But great stadium. Right, talked about it last week. You're walking in the neighborhood, and all of a sudden, you got a stadium on your hands. It's just a great little place.
It's tremendous. It really is. It's where we get to sit. The press box is pretty tight. It hangs over the stands, and you kind of go on a catwalk to get up there, which is really fun. And they hate Seattle. fun. I mean, you know, we're in a suit, and I got a lapel pin on, and I've not been spit on yet, but I've been called some choice things that would offend my mother. I can tell you that. So it's been great. Yeah, Aaron, when you were there, Aaron, they still had the Timber Army when you were there, and that thing has been good for Portland. Good for Portland.
Oh yeah, it's it was amazing back then. Even when I was playing in the USL days, I mean, guys, I specifically remember we had a game in Puerto Rico one time, and they were there. There was 10 of them. In Puerto Rico is part of a vacation thing that they just did, a tour.
Yeah,
I mean, unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, that's you know, that's the kind of level that you get with some of those people down there. It's amazing.
Yeah, Brian Schmetzer tells the story that when he was coaching the Sounders in the USL days, he and Tommy Dutrow were eating breakfast, and they were up against the window, excuse me, and two fans went walking by. And it was early in the morning, and Brian and Tommy were just sitting there, and all of a sudden they realized who those two guys were, and they came back, and they both of them just flipped Brian and Tommy off. And Brian and Tommy kind of took it as a compliment, like, well, thank you, appreciate it, enjoy the game this afternoon.
Yeah, I'll just keep enjoying my coffee here, thanks, have a good day.
That's the passion those people
and
have.
For Tommy and Brian, I mean, they were not offended. They appreciated the recognition, and they appreciated the passion for the Portland Timbers.
Sure.
So, but they are struggling. They're not. They've got talent. They've got weapons on the wings. They've got a terrific forward up front, and Donovan Ricketts in goal is a veteran guy. He may be getting near the end of his career, but they just haven't seemed to. Giving up goals when late, and
mm-hmm.
Seattle too. Seattle's looking for a clean sheet. We've given up four. The last four goals we've given up, only one's been in the run of play. Two have been penalty kicks, and one's been an own goal. So we've had a bit of bad luck when it comes to the goals. Having said that, I think we're now 15 goals in five games, so we're able to work around it. When you're averaging, I think we're averaging two. Just over two goals a game, about 2.15, something like that. So,
yeah.
But
well, and
hasn't,
let's see. And we're looking ahead here to Sunday. The Sounders travel to New England, as we talked about, and they'll get a chance to play there at Gillette Stadium, and looking to further their lead there atop the Western Conference, Pete. We're almost running out of time, but we did want to talk one. We just wanted to get your thoughts. One more thought on. Heading into the World Cup, U.S. soccer, Jurgen Klinsmann, what do you see coming out of the U.S. here in the next few months with the World Cup?
Well, I'm a big Jurgen Klinsmann fan. Like you said, Todd, a minute ago about him wanting to get the chemistry in the locker room right. I think every World Cup for the U.S. is such an opportunity to advance as a country, as a soccer country. And I think we have a team right now that has experience. I know we have a tough group, but I've never been. They got to play us too, and I think Jurgen, as much as any foreign coach could do, buys into America and the mindset that we can overcome anything. I think he's painting a picture that says, hey, Ghana, Portugal, and Germany, that's a terrible group. But I think behind closed doors, he's relishing the fact that we have such a tough group. There's no pressure on the U.S. And with the talent we have, Dempsey and Howard in goal and Michael Bradley, I think this is a team that Donovan is in the squad. If he is in there, we've got some experience and some guys who want to end their World Cup career on better than going out with, three games and calling it good. I think we got to get off to a good start. Ghana, that first game is going to be really important. We got to get a win in that one, and if you go 1-1 mm-hmm. in the others, I think you have a good chance of advancing. And
I think this though, Pete. In looking at the lineup, I mean, if we win the game against Ghana, and let's say we drop the game against Portugal, and we're not able to contain Ronaldo. Going into the Germany game, Germany is likely already qualified at that point, and they may be resting players at that point. We might be playing against some of their second-tier players, and we could sneak a draw and get in.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with you. I don't know that they will take their foot off the gas for their former World Cup champion and former coach.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's always been some angst about Jurgen hanging out in the summer times in California, and when he came to Germany, back to Germany to coach the national team, and I don't know if he brought yoga instructors from Venice Beach or where, but I know he brought a staff that they were like, Who are these guys? They don't have an accent like us. So I think, you know, but having said that, they love him there. I think for the first time, honestly, since the war, Germany had some national pride. People said they were putting flags out for the first time. I think you're going to have a lot to do with that. But I think it could go either way. It could go where, yeah, Todd, you're right. They may have already qualified, and they may be resting some players, or they may say, hey, we owe this guy for, one, turning us down the first time, and then, two, leaving us the second time, and let's make sure we don't let – no one wants to see America, outside America, advance in the World Cup. That's for sure.
It's very true. Well, let's talk about the Portugal match. Do we have anybody – that can defend Cristiano Ronaldo? And that really brings up one other thing we wanted to talk about, and that's DeAndre Yedlin. Is there a guy in the U.S. squad that can defend Ronaldo, and is maybe DeAndre Yedlin that player?
They're going to have to do everything they can to keep the ball from him. So that might mean one guy in front of him and one guy behind him. I mean, I think that's the first thing. Don't let him get the ball. That doesn't mean kick the living crap out of him. I don't think that is smart. You wake a sleeping giant right there. He's been kicked all his career, so I don't think that's the best approach. But if you confront him so that he doesn't get the ball, I think he's going to gain an assignment from someone. But you can't, you know, even our best back can't go and try to get a ball that Ronaldo will spin you too quick. You'll get a body on you, and then you're done. So I think you almost have to plant one in front and one behind, and that might have to be the best approach. And then with DeAndre, I like DeAndre. He's got the goofy hair, and let's not call it goofy hair. He's always done that, by the way. I coached him for a week.
Goofy's giving him really a lot of credit. It's terrible. It's just terrible hair. I'm sorry.
I had a name for it, and then I realized it wasn't very respectful. He's a terrific young man and really eager to learn, really wants to get better. I think if he got on the World Cup team, he'd be one of those players that they say, let's bring him in now because we think he can play in the next one, two, maybe even three World Cups. So he's become a very good pro. You reach your prime when you're 26, 27, 28 in this game, and he's still 23, 22, I think. So he's got, you know, still lessons to learn. It makes me nervous sometimes guys get in behind him. He's got the bite and fire, but he's, you know, in the last one with Dallas, he was quite chippy with some of the guys, and I think he's just got to find what is acceptable and what's not acceptable. But he's a good pro, and he's been an everyday professional since he stepped on with the team, and I really like that a lot. I think they view DeAndre as the back of the future he's the back of the present and the future for the club, and I think Dylan Remick on the left side is similar in that regard as well. So I don't know that he will. I could see him getting on the roster. I don't know that he would get the time. I think if Jurgen's looking at some of the video, him getting beat in behind, which he can fix. Again, that's part of the learning curve.
The problem that I see, though, is he does get beat in behind, but in the MLS, his pace allows him to recover, but he can't recover at the next level. He doesn't have – I mean, he's got the same pace as everybody else. So I just see that tactically, I think he's a little off, a little naive, because he's been able to rely on his pace to recover for a long time. And so, you know, I just see that as an issue. But a talented player and an upcoming American player that's obviously going to be in the mix for the national team in the next round of qualifying.
Hey, I agree. And the good news is that he wants to learn. So if he heard you say that, he'd say, yeah, fair enough. I am studying video. I am working on my one-on-one defending with Leo Gonzalez. I am spending extra time on the field. And he wants, you know, he does. He's always been a fan of the clothing and the hair. But, you know, Aaron Kovar, one of his teammates with the Sounders, grew up with him. He said he was doing that when they were 15. So that's kind of his
nothing
thing.
New.
But you know, I also respect.
On the 1v1 defending, I'd rather have him go with Chad Marshall than Leo Gonzalez. But you know, we'll take whatever. It could be, you know, the point is obviously he's an eager kid that wants to get better. So, but Pete, we're gonna get cut off here. I hate to cut you off. We're definitely gonna have you back on. It's been fantastic to talk to you, and thank you so much. For the insight into the Sounders and everything else. And good luck on the broadcast this Sunday, and we'll talk to you soon, Pete.
Great. Thanks a lot, Todd. Aaron, thanks very much. I sure enjoyed it.
Thanks, Pete. Appreciate it.
You bet. Take care of you guys. Bye-bye.
Take care.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Just great to have Pete Ewing on, Aaron.
Fantastic.
He's, you know, great guy, and just some great insight there with the Sounders. But
absolutely,
we've stretched this 90 minutes out, and we're still here on the touchline, but it's just about over. But great show, Aaron, and thanks to all the listeners. We will be back next week. Stay tuned.